right. Meta-analysis, in its simplest form, is just another statistical analysis. That's it. Instead of individuals as cases, we have analyses as cases. Instead of a behavior or a characteristic measured as the dependent variable, we have the effect size as a dependent variable. Instead of things that describe or procedures that were done to that individual, we have procedures or characteristics that describe the analysis that led to the effect size. But it's the same basic system. You put it into a matrix where each row is a case and each column is a descriptor. One of those is holding the dependent variable. All of the rest of those are holding whatever you want to call them. Attributes, features, predictors, IVs, whatever. So what we have to do is make sure that we capture the logic of the transition from analyzing data, dependent variables from cases, to effect sizes from analyses. There are some things that we're going to make a fuss about today that we didn't make a fuss about before because it was obvious before, but took meta-analysts a while to figure out as an issue here. Hey. All right. Inverse variance weight. Sounds kind of scary. Not even sure what some of those words mean. An effect size based on 400 participants is assumed to be a better estimate of the population effect size than one based on 50 participants. Right? More is better. Now, remember that we decided we have to be smarter than that. The real phrase isn't more is better. The real phrase is more of the same is better. If I'm trying to represent third graders and I've run out of third graders, and I go grab myself a mix of second graders and fourth graders, because they're third graders on average, I might not have done myself a favor. In particular, if performance on that dependent variable is related to grade, if I have second, third, and fourth graders instead of just third graders, I might get a good mean representing third graders. If the fourth graders are as much better than the third graders, or the second graders are poorer than the third graders, I might end up with a really beautifully representative mean. But I guarantee you the standard deviation is inflated. And if the standard deviation is inflated, all of the statistical analyses are less powerful. So, more is better is a place to start, but remember, we're smarter than that. More of the same is better. But what can we do if we can't have more of the same? Well, that's one of the things we're going to study in the spring. It's called a factorial design, where we say, I got everybody here. I wanted third graders, but I have second, third, and fourth graders. So I'm going to make that second variable, what grade they're in, part of the analysis. Now, that's not going to screw us up, because we're going to have a statistical way for looking basically at second, third, and fourth graders separately or in aggregate and decide which one we like. We've already done that here. Because we've already decided that every one of these variables we're going to code on several descriptive features or elements or IVs or predictors. Is it an experiment or a non-experiment? If I wanted to study experimental results in this area, and there weren't that many of them, but I noticed there's a lot of non-experimental, you wouldn't just add them in and say they're more of the same. But if you add it in and code them so you know which is which, now you know when you're crossing boundaries, you know when you're inflating things, particularly variability, and you can make comparisons. So more is better as a flat statement, as long as you're keeping track of how that more varies among themselves. So if you just want to look at one thing, more of the same is better is a good rule. You'll be fine there. More of the same is better. But we realize that there's more going on in the world than third graders. We might decide that we want to study all of grade school children. But if we're going to do that, we've just changed populations and we need to keep track of who is what. How we doing? Now, for those of you who have this silly idea that somehow our science should be helping our society, Obviously, this means that we need to do a really good job of identifying the descriptive features of the sample that sat behind that study and effect size. Things like, what was the gender mix? What was the orientation mix? What was the heritage mix? Those kinds of things. Oh, wait, we know this. We know that external validity elements can have an impact on statistical conclusion validity. Because who you study may reasonably change the answer you get. Oh, shit, we knew that. We're fine. But you got to remember it. Now it's not the attributes of the person. It's the attributes of the group of people that led to that effect size. So effect sizes from larger studies should count for more than effect sizes from smaller studies. This is kind of like correlations. You get that positive correlation between practice and performance. Should I practice more? Yeah. Why? Because more is better. How much? Yep. Well, how much more should I practice? More. And things will be better? Yeah. How much? Better. Okay. That's why pretty quickly when we come back to study correlations in the spring, we're going to shift from studying correlations to studying regression models. Because regression models give you this cool little thing called a regression weight that tells you how much more is how much better. What we're searching for here is the equivalent of that. Okay, larger is better, especially if it's larger, the same, or larger, we know whether it's same or different, but how much? How do you weight these? And an obvious original choice was to weight each one by the sample size. So you literally said, if I have 400 of these, I weight that by 400. If I have 50 of these, I weight this one by 50, da-da-da-da-da. Well, that wasn't going to last, because it's just too simple. And it's not that simple things don't work, but come on, calculus is better than arithmetic, right? And it's the same thing in statistics. Carefully wrought understanding a sampling distribution is better than assuming that you have an equal number of each. And so Hedges, really huge Hedges fan, said, all right, listen, what are we trying to do? One thing I always loved about Hedges and Hedges' lab and the people that he worked with was they start somewhere on purpose. What are we trying to do? And this was during the era of effect sizes and power analysis. And so the obvious answer is, get it right. And the biggest problem for estimation is always the error term. Estimating the numerator is relatively easy. Estimating the variability in the estimate of that is a total pain in the ass. So we said, what do we want? We want power. We want to increase the precision of our effect size estimates, which means we want to reduce the variability in those estimates. Are you okay with that going together? If you estimate more accurately, there's going to be less variability in your estimate. Less variability, more power, stronger tests. He showed that by weighting the effect sizes by their inverse variance minimizes the variance of their sum and mean, and so minimizes the standard error. Now, a great thing about Hedges and Tukey were both particularly wonderful about this. They tried a whole bunch of different ones and showed statistically this works better. They also did all of the math to show that it should work better. And it's kind of like empirical scientists love a hypothesis that comes out of the literature and is then supported empirically. Statisticians love a piece of math that then works best when you compare it to other things. So he did everything right. The resulting smaller standard error leads to narrower confidence intervals, more powerful significance tests. The optimum weight is 1 over the square of the standard error. Which means anytime we calculate an effect size, we have to know how to calculate that. Because remember, we need two things in our effect sizes. They need to be standardized, and we need a standard error. And now the way we calculate that is going to be designed to minimize that standard error. And so here are the proper formulas and the reductive formulas for each of our friends, D, R, and the odds ratio. Notice that it's always tied to sample size. Bigger samples give us tighter estimates. And so the inverse variance weight, you calculate this, and I'll show you the Excel formula. Then 1 over that is the inverse variance weight, and that's what we're going to use to weight each effect size. Each effect size is going to have an inverse variance weight, which tells us how important it ought to be to the aggregate based on the relative sample size. The only thing we're doing is we're not using a direct sample size. We're using a recalculation of the sample size that minimizes error. This is sweet as it can be. Because the variability in R is tied to nothing except sample size, the one we're going to use most often is the easiest one to calculate. So instead of estimating by n, you estimate as n minus 3. Ooh, that's hardly worth it. It's a constant. It's probably not going to change that much. Here, with these others, there's a lot more variability because a correlation is almost normally distributed. D's and odds ratios are not normally distributed, so you have to transform them more. And please note that you calculate this after you've done your normalizing transformation. We'll see.